What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming live for the Built for Tough studio. Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the fans, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. And wherever you are in the free Odyssey app, good Tuesday morning. No baseball last night, but it was a nice little breather as we get ready for it. It's going to be an intense stretch run here for the Mets and Yankees. Football is heating up everywhere. Yesterday when we were at Jerry's golf tournament down in Hazlitt or Marlboro yesterday at Bella Vista was asking me about the Giants and the Jets. Every person I ran into was more about Giants and Jets than it was Mets and Yankees just for yesterday. And yeah, there is some optimism certainly around the Giants, not as much around the Jets, but I still think that nationally, nobody thinks that the Jets or Giants are going to do a thing, and we're maybe just overrating the Giants a little bit going into this season because things have been so bad and they feel a little bit better. But if you look, now it doesn't really mean anything, but if you look at like power rankings and stuff like this around the country, the Giants and the Jets are like 30th, 31st, yeah. 28th, 29th. I mean, are we in for another one of these combined seven-win seasons? Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Jim. Doing well. I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I met a Giant fan yesterday. He's very interesting. It was Zach Wilson's father-in-law.
I met him as well, yes.
Really nice guy.
We might be going somewhere with him, by the way.
Any football games.
Not a football game.
I will say, Jerry's Golf Tournament, tremendous. They have so many nice people that have been supporting this cause for Scott. And I'm wearing their wristband. It says, his fight is our fight. And yesterday, you see all these people coming out in this local community for this one person to try to help this one person's family. And it's really amazing to watch Jerry do his thing, and very proud of him and what he did, and especially the people that attended yesterday. And lo and behold, yeah, we met Zach Wilson's father-in-law.
Yeah.
Zach Wilson sucks.
No, not today.
I didn't say that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did many times. I don't know if he knew my Zach Wilson take.
No, he knew. You know, he told me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we talked about what it means to play quarterback in the city. And I said, look, man, I've lived both sides of it.
Wait, hold on, before we go into what did he say? Because I talked to him afterwards. He didn't mention anything about this. So he knew how much I thought that he stunk?
He said he couldn't get up in the morning and turn on the radio.
Oh, okay.
All right. And I said, look,
it's not my fault.
That stinks.
All right. I mean
it's
not my fault.
It's great, and I'm very happy for your daughter. And he goes, oh, I couldn't have picked a better son-in-law, and he really does love Zach, and that's great. And Zach,
Josh Allen, maybe, I guess.
Zach is now down in Miami, but I mean.
I can't go for Zach.
Can't go for Zach, no.
No can do. I can't go for Zach.
Can't go for Zach, no.
I think we just got disinvited to that thing we got invited to.
Just so he knows, I didn't ask for any of this now. I was just saying how.
Me either, yeah.
I met a Giant fan who just happened to be Zach Wilson's dad. And then, of course.
No, father-in-law.
Father-in-law. Yeah. Then we got into the discussion about, you know, him playing here and how difficult it was for the family and how difficult it was to go to games. And I said, listen, I lived that life. I know, man. For the first year and a half, it was sunshine and rainbows. And for the next year and a half, it was Hurricane Erin.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. I mean, that's just, unfortunately, I was caught up in the storm that is the New York Jet quarterback position, just like many have been.
Yeah.
So I tried to tell him, I said, look, maybe he's in a good spot. You know, we've seen Geno Smith, we've seen Sam Darnold, we've seen Baker Mayfield, all these guys go through the ringer and then come out the other side a little bit more mature around people that they trust, and they feel better about, you know, who they become as a player, not a person. Nobody ever questioned who Zach Wilson was as a person.
No.
Everybody questioned whether or not he could handle the starting quarterback position.
And he couldn't. I mean, it just the facts bared that out.
I told his father-in-law, I said, look, He's a great kid. If I had the second pick, I would have never drafted a kid from where Zach is from to New York. If I were Denver, maybe. If I were Kansas City, of course. If I were Minnesota with Kevin O'Connell, 100% I would have drafted the kid. But I would not want him to be drafted to New York because of where he is from, a small community in Utah. Now, listen, Jackson Dart went to the same high school. And yeah. Jackson Dart seems to have a different personality than Zach. I think Zach really tried very hard when he first got here. If you remember, they were going to all the Islander playoff games. He was taking his teammates there. And, you know, he really, really tried. He wanted to be successful.
Well, Jackson Dart also left there, you know, played in the SEC, played a bunch of games. You know, like Zach was in that bubble there the entire time.
Exactly. And plus, he was coming out of the COVID years.
Right.
So, So he was definitely protected before he got here. And then holy hell hit him and right in the face. Mm. And now he's down in Miami with Mike McDaniel, who I did tell his father-in-law. I said, you know, if they don't get it right down there, you know, I could see Stephen Ross pulling the plug on that team, you know, on that coach. And I would think, and I got to believe, and maybe you would be able to find this for us, that the coach that is most likely to be fired at the end of this season, if the season goes haywire.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be Mike McDaniel.
You'd think that he would be, like, at the top of that list. As much as I like him, as smart as I think he is as a football coach, that doesn't mean that, you know, he demands the respect from everybody in that building. I know he gets it from his quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, and I think part of Tua's beginning here this year, going after a little bit of Tyreek Hill, was to support his coach that I'm sure Tua loves.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brian Daboll is still the favorite as the first coach to be fired in the NFL at plus 400. And Mike McDaniel +500.
All right, so that doesn't really make a lot of sense, because if everybody is, or around here, is overreacting to the Giants and what they've seen thus far, then it doesn't match up with that. That's for sure.
Well, that's sort of exactly what I was saying.
Yeah, but I was saying, like, Julian Edelman and Gronk are not idiots. I mean, they know what the hell they're talking about.
Debatable with Gronk.
Well, at times he plays into that,
but he's also they're friendly with Brian Daboll. I don't know how much they're really watching of the preseason or knowing what's going on. I don't know.
I think Julian pays attention. I know he pays attention. As a matter of fact, now Gronk, that's a whole other story. I mean, like, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. But and I know they're friendly with Brian Daboll. But I do feel like the Giants are a much more competitive team. Like, when I saw them playing against the Jets the other night, you know, I saw a team that looked like it really wants to get this thing straightened out. And they do have young players that are very exciting. And they have a defensive line that's going to put pressure on the opposing quarterback. And, you know, they're playing against the Jets, who have a rookie offense coordinator, Justin Fields on his fourth different offensive system, only really one wide receiver that you worry about in Garrett Wilson. The Jets are going to be like more of a running-oriented team, and they're going to try to keep games close, which I think is really going to hurt Justin Fields. But the Giants, on the other hand, you know, they do have a Hall of Fame-bound quarterback that's leading the team right now. They also have a quarterback that doesn't turn the ball over, and that was their biggest bugaboo the last couple of years. I think they were 1-7 in one-score games, and probably had the worst turnover ratio in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, an offense that was barely non-existent for most of the year.
Turnovers, sacks, penalties.
Yeah, just
all
brutal.
All that kind of crap.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first two games are so...
And a lack of getting turnovers.
Right, exactly. I mean, the turnover differential was one of the worst in football, if not the worst in football. These first two games are going to tell a story about this season. If they go 0-2 in those first two games, and just goodbye, good night, it's all about...
Well, it's how they go 0-2. They go 0-2 34-7.
Yeah, but we're talking about being relevant, though. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you know, I think, Jim Fossil went through this when he was the head coach of the Giants. Like, there are a lot of questions about him. Remember, he pushed his chips to the table.
Yeah,
Tom Coughlin's been through this with the player council and all this other crap.
But those guys actually, you know, they succeeded.
But I know. They turned it around because, well, Jim finally got Kerry Collins. And then, of course, Eli Manning grew up and matured. And they had that run in 2007 that basically solidified, you know, his career here. And that's Brian Daboll needs that. He needs that from Jackson Dart. Certainly not right now, but he definitely needs that from Jackson Dart eventually. But I think they have I'm going to beat this into the ground until he proves me wrong. He's going to keep the game close, Russell Wilson. He's going to throw the ball deep. He may throw an interception here or there, But for the most part, if this defensive line lives up to the expectations that we all have for them, they should be able to get to the fourth quarter in those one-score games. And the difference in those one-score games have got to be Russell Wilson versus Daniel Jones.
Yes, and I do think the defense, it's going to be, to me, Dexter Lawrence and Abdul Carter more than Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau. If Dexter Lawrence continues his dominance, and there's no reason to believe that he does not, and Abdul Carter turns into the player that most expect him to be, then yes, this team can be competitive. And those other two guys, if you get anything above average from them and Burns and Thibodeau, then yeah, you maybe really have
other
something.
Guys, right? Brian Burns is a monster.
Yeah,
right?
I think he's a little overrated. I mean, last year he was okay. Honestly, he wasn't a world beater last year.
I'll tell you, you'd have to worry about Dexter Lawrence and him, and that was it, really. I mean, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau came on late in the year after he got back from an injury. But look, they're all four there. They all know the expectations. They hear the buzz around them, and I do think that guys like Cam Scataboo and Abdul Carter and, of course, Jackson Dart bring a level of excitement and youthfulness to a team. And they also bring expectations because where they were, they were winners in college.
Yeah, I really do. And I know Giants fans, every time I see them or on social media, they always give me crap and think that I'm rooting against the Giants, which is the exact opposite. And just because I grew up a Vikings fan and they're both in the NFC doesn't mean anything to me. I want the Giants at this point in my life to be competitive and to be good, to make our jobs more fun, because Mondays in the fall aren't fun. Listen to all you guys bitch year after year after year. So let me just say that for the 50th time. I really want them to have success. I hope you're right. I really do. I hope you're right. I just don't see it. I can't. I cannot sit here before either the Jets or Giants play a regular season game and project either one of those teams to have a good season until I actually see it. I can't go out on a limb and do that anymore.
The coaches and the players have to, you know, play the game in a different way than we talk about it. So in other words, it's one snap, it's one series, it's one quarter, blah, blah, blah. And that's all they have to worry about. So for the Giants, the whole focus is trying to contain Jaden Daniels and trying to keep him in the pocket and stop him from extending plays. And that's why they drafted a guy like Abdul Carter. Mm-hmm. That they want the speed. They need to match the speed, and they got to do it on defense. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, if they can go 1-1 in these first two games both away,
yeah,
I think that is a success. That would be a success.
Huge.
500 after 2 weeks would be a success. Well, bitch and complain about the loss, whichever one it may be. But if they can win one of these games on the road, that would be huge.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that changes or extends their relevancy for longer than you would even imagine. Because if they lose, they go 0-2. I mean, then you're talking about, you know, another two games that they're going to be major underdogs in. Then, of course, they got New Orleans, who stinks, but it is down there. And then you got Philadelphia 2 out of 3 weeks and have to go to Denver in there. So, I mean, if you're 0-2 coming out of that thing, I mean, it could be like 1-8 before you look up.
I know, but you never know what the other team is experiencing. Like, well, I can look at those logos and I can say, oh, yeah, that's going to be a good team. That's going to be good. I don't know what they're going to look like when the Giants, and then we don't know what the Giants are going to look like when they
get there. You could say that about the Commanders and the Cowboys. Some of these other teams, I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles have been as consistent as any team in the league.
Well, they're going to have a health. Well, I don't know. Will they have a healthy San Francisco? Will they have, you know, Bo Nix going to, you know, have a sophomore slump like C.J. Stroud did? You know, what is Caleb Williams going to be like?
I mean, you're banking a lot on the opponent being bad. You know, and I know you can't just assume that they're going to be good, but I mean, sometimes you just want to look at a couple of games and be like, you know, you should be favored in that situation, and they're just not going to be.
I understand that. I totally understand looking at the, and that's exactly what, you know, Zach Wilson's father-in-law was saying last night.
About what, the Giants?
About the Giants' schedule. Like I feel like the Giants are a team now. I don't know what's going to happen next year. To me, with what they added this year, I feel like they're on the upswing. I feel like the Patriots are on the upswing. I feel like there are certain teams that are starting to come out of the abyss that they've been in. You know, I think the Jets are still there, and it's going to take a couple of years before they get out of it. But there are teams around the league where you look and you say, okay, who would have thought that Washington would have come out of the abyss of what the hell that franchise went through for the last 15 years?
Well, there was a ton of changes there, though. I mean, so it happened quicker than maybe people thought, but they got the toxic owner out of there. They had the number 2 overall pick in the draft. They got a new head coach who had been the coach of a team that won an NFC championship game. I mean, there was a lot of things that changed there. you know, what you're what you have here with the Giants is, you know, the same regime coming back, all the same coaches coming back, a quarterback that you drafted that you don't expect to start like Jaden Daniels did, and a veteran in Russell Wilson that you're not sure exactly what you're going to get out of it. And I do think that...
I think they know what they're going to get out of Russell Wilson.
Well, yeah, but I mean...
It's not going to be flashy. It's not going to be exciting.
Okay, I mean, he's going to be above average, hopefully.
And well, that's really what you're hopefully hoping for. Andrew Thomas is out there week one, and hopefully Malik Nabers is out there week one.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's there's a big difference between the humongous shakeup that happened in Washington as opposed to what's going on with the Giants from last year.
I can't sit here and kill the Giants for keeping Joe Shane and Brian Daigle.
I've
always said we need they and the Jets both need stability. You can't keep changing every 2 years and expecting, you know, new results.
Yeah, I'm right. And I like the fact that they're still here as well. But when you say, like, who saw it coming with the Commanders, I mean, they had basically a disease left that organization when Dan Snyder did.
But nobody saw what happened with them.
Not going to the NFC Championship game.
Especially with a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, not that good.
And there will be a team this year, and I'm going to say it could be the Giants. I'm not saying it's going to be the Giants. But there's going to be one of these teams that, you know, nobody expects to make it simply because of what they did in the offseason. Maybe the Patriots.
Well, it's going to have to come down to a young quarterback that we don't know enough about. That's really what it comes down to with the Commanders. We can talk about the coach or the owner or anything else. It was Jaden Daniels. That was it.
I mean, had a coach who had a solid defense.
So maybe Jack Sadark gets an opportunity and is able to do that this year for the Giants, but it's not going to be right away like it was for Jaden Daniels. But, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Is there a superstar in the making on the team?
Here's the one thing I think of is that, you know, that was a defensive head coach. That is the defensive head coach down in Washington. And they brought in Cliff Kingsbury for Jaden Daniels. And he was with Caleb Williams. Mm-hmm. I think he was with Kyler Murray. Wasn't he with one of those guys? Or
Cliff Kingsbury with Kyler Murray in Arizona, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then before that, though, in college, wasn't he with Patrick Mahomes as an offensive coordinator or something?
Well, I think it was the head coach there.
Head coach, whatever.
Yeah.
So he has had his success with these young quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a great hire by Washington. It took him away from USC and said, look, come here and let's see if we can get what we can get out of Jaden Daniels. And that was a brilliant hire, and it worked out really good for them. And, you know, that's where a defensive head coach who doesn't understand, he may understand the quarterback position. I'm saying that he doesn't totally understand it, but there is a psychology to it. And the thing that I worry about, like, now with the Jets and Justin Fields, like, he's trying to rebuild his confidence. You know, like a Cliff Kingsbury would have been great for him.
Yeah.
You have Tanner Engstrom, and there's no reason to criticize a guy who's getting a job for the first time. But matching these two together doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, like if you had an older quarterback that maybe would have a better understanding, I guess that's Tyrod Taylor's role on this team, is to kind of be the older guy in the room, trying to keep the room solid and keep everybody together. But this match of a rookie offensive coordinator who's never called plays and a guy that's really struggled in his entire young career here learning another offense is not a great match from my perspective, and I would be worried about it. I mean, like, and you have a defensive head coach.
Well, unless...
And the defensive head coach, what does he want to do? He wants to run the ball and he wants to play defense.
Well, I mean, unless Tanner Engstrom is the next Ben Johnson, because at one point Ben Johnson was a rookie offensive coordinator with Jared Goff, who was in a place where career was...
He was a Super Bowl quarterback.
Yeah, I know, but we understand that they got rid of him because they couldn't win the Super Bowl with him and won the Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford.
He was a Super Bowl quarterback who was coached by Sean McVay.
Who got completely shut down in the Super Bowl. Like,
yeah, that's because Sean McVay had his tongue out when he met Bill Belichick.
All right, but let's not pretend that when we thought Jared Goff went to Detroit that things were going to go well for him. I mean, I think a lot of people said...
In the beginning, it didn't. They were 0-11.
Right, exactly. So my point is that I think there's more of it. Like, Tanner Engstrom could be, I mean...
You're telling me that Justin Fields is going to turn into Jared Goff because of Tanner
I didn't
Engstrom?
No. What I said was, I'm giving you an example. I mean, I know you hate when I throw facts at you that might disagree with you.
I know you really hate that. Come on.
But you said that marrying a guy who is, like, in a different offense with a rookie offensive coordinator is a tough thing. And I'm giving you an example of not exactly the same. Because, yes, Jared Goff had more success than Justin Fields. But at one point, Jared Goff was on the way down. And a rookie offensive coordinator named Ben Johnson was there. and it ended up working out, and now Ben Johnson's freaking coaching the Bears and is like the golden boy, and Jared Goff is in the MVP conversation. So I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm just giving you an example of where you just don't know with some of these younger guys.
You don't know, but I just, again, Justin Fields has been so erratic.
Yeah, well,
yeah, and there's a lot of it, some of it's not his fault because he's had a lot of different coaches. He's had a lot of different people in his ear. They have to try to marry the right offensive system, which is not the system that Jared Goff flourishes in. There couldn't be two more opposite quarterbacks than Justin Fields and Jared Goff. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, but it's not so much how they play the game. You were making the generic statement of someone who struggled in a different offense and a rookie offensive coordinator. So I came up with a comparison, whereas this Tanner Engstrom came from underneath Ben Johnson, who went through all of that, and he was able to see it. So
yeah, but that was the second offense that Jared Goff was in, and maybe one of the best play callers in the NFL is Ben Johnson, and also play designers.
Well, maybe Tanner Engstrom's that guy.
I hope that he is that
guy.
That's
the point that I'm trying to make.
But my point is, in regards to where Justin Fields is in his career, it's kind of like, you know, Geno Smith. It's kind of like Baker Mayfield. It's kind of like Sam Darnold. And are they going to be able to unlock whatever potential they think that they have with him? I don't necessarily believe that this is going to be a grind.
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with whatever coach is coaching him or anything. I just don't think that Justin Fields is any good.
Well, that's a whole other story.
Well, we could sit here and say, what type of situation is he? I don't think there's a single situation out there that he's going to succeed in. But, you know, if we're just having the conversation to have the conversation, then, you know, maybe he could find a silver lining.
I think if he were with an established organization that had solid coaching, Kansas City, Baltimore, I think he would have some success.
Yeah, I mean, that's
but he's not going to have 5,000 yards and 35 touchdown success.
No, anywhere. I mean, in the perfect situation.
No, I think that unfortunately that ship has probably sailed for him.
Yeah.
And you have to keep your expectations to a minimum, I think. And if I were coaching that guy, and this goes back to the defensive head coach part of it, if I were coaching that guy, or if I were coaching Mark Sanchez when he was with the Jets, I would throw that guy out there and just throw and throw and throw and throw and throw. Just keep throwing. Just keep throwing. So when you finally get on the field and the bullets are flying for real, that you're not going to be overwhelmed, you're not going to be nervous, you're not going to have high anxiety and launching balls over people's heads or throwing balls at people's feet, like Zach would do at times here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because they tried to protect him. And sometimes you just can't protect the kid. You just got to let him go, just like they did up in Buffalo with Josh Allen. Now, that's a special personality. And maybe Jackson Dart has some of that. I don't know.
Well, I think Brian Daboll is hoping so. I think Brian Daboll saw some of that in Jackson Dart in the pre-draft process. Is it really
could
hoping?
Could you see this? You remember when the Philadelphia Eagles drafted Carson Wentz number one overall?
Yeah.
I think it was one over two or one
it
or
was
two,
number
right?
two behind two. Jared Goff.
All right. He was number two behind Jared Goff. Do you remember who the starting quarterback for them going into that season was?
For the Philadelphia Eagles?
Yes.
God. I mean, so I know that...
Sam Bradford,
yeah. And then they traded him to Minnesota.
And they called Carson when he was out
turkey
hunting.
And then Nick Foles was the backup, yeah.
My buddy Frank, buddy Frank called him when he was turkey hunting and said, hey, Carson, guess what? You're going to be starting week one.
That because Teddy Bridgewater blew out his knee in training camp, and then the Vikings traded for Sam Bradford.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And the Philadelphia Eagles said, all right, we're going with the rookie. I mean, could that happen here with the Giants? Is there a... Do you see any situation where Russell Wilson could find himself in the same way that Sam Bradford found himself? Things change quickly in the NFL, bro.
It'd have to be a massive injury and someone out for the year. And that's what it'd have to be, right?
I mean, Kirk Cousins would fall into that, but he would be a little bit more expensive, I think.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to have a similar situation where...
I mean, Jackson Dart would have to blow the doors off of everybody in that building. There would have to be a trade offer for Russell. I don't know what they
Well, you have to have a team, because that Vikings team that year thought that they were pretty good, and when they lost Bridgewater, who went to the Pro Bowl the previous year, they were like, we got to do something. We can't waste this roster. And they went out and traded for Sam Bradford. So it had to be a team that has high expectations that loses their quarterback that's desperate. Maybe.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Hi, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Opened up with the Jets and the Giants and the expectations and meeting Zach Wilson's father-in-law yesterday at Jerry's golf tournament at Bella Vista, and training camp coverage on WFAN brought to you by Geico. Switch and save. Get more with Geico. And one guy we didn't mention in the first segment that I want to mention when Jerry was in here is the great Keith Hannon, who donated a massive amount to play with us and to the cause yesterday. And, I mean, this man is so generous, so great. His son is awesome. He's just this happy, just bright, generous man who is trying to help as many people as he can. And just one of those guys that, like, lifts everybody up around him when you see him. So I just wanted to thank him on the air today for how much he cares about this particular event and Scott and Jerry and us and our show. And, I mean, really just amazing.
I concur because, you know, 18 holes, laughing out loud.
Yeah.
And his son Chris is quite the golfer, man. And he's going to St. Peter's to go play golf.
That's awesome.
And, you know, if he really applies himself,
he could be great.
Yeah. Scary how good he can be. So, Jerry, thank you for the cheat code yesterday. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
You guys are champions again.
Yeah. Well, he's the champion. Had a lot to do with it, man.
Yeah. It was 75% him. We filled in the cracks.
I mean, you know, the kid's hitting the ball 320 yards, and I'm like, sitting out there with a sand wedge in my hand or
every hole,
50 degree, almost every hole. And he actually drove one of the par fours.
He did, yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
He's a hell of a player. So,
and a nice kid, too.
Keith's
really
brother
nice
is really cool, too. I don't know if you met him yesterday.
Yes, I did. Yes. Did, yeah, he was, yeah, nice he was a Long Island guy, too, and then moved to New Jersey. But, yeah,
I got to say thank family. You to my old teammate, Marco Battaglia, because that's how I met Keith Hannon.
Oh, really?
Through Marco?
Through Marco, yeah. He's a huge Rutgers supporter as well. So, and Keith basically, you know, as you said, he likes to help a lot of people, and he certainly does, and enjoys life, I would say.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. Smile on his face 24-7.
That was a great round of golf. I got to say, it's one of the more enjoyable rounds, even though it took me an hour and a half to get there. That's not your fault.
Understood.
Not your fault.
Understood.
That Jersey Turnpike, they closed one lane down on the entrance onto the turnpike.
Ugh.
And that sucks because that road has more trucks.
The turnpike sucks. I can't argue. I don't think they would argue either.
Parkway's
always good. The turnpike sucks.
Yeah. Always, you know, coming out of Bella Vista to try and get back to the parkway.
I know, 18 to
reminds me
of
leave my office in Garden City and trying to get to the LIE. Yeah,
bouncing through the neighborhoods.
Oh, and they got lights everywhere. Yeah. I mean, God almighty.
Yeah, not easy.
But nonetheless, we enjoyed our time
great
yesterday.
Day.
Thank you for being there.
It was a great cause, and you got a lot of great friends down there, Jerry.
I thank you for being there. So, we are brought to you by Primo Brands, the official water sponsor of MLB, Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. We do have baseball back tonight. The Mets are in Washington to take on the Nationals. You got David Peterson and Jake Irvin, the starters. Mets lead the Reds by a game for the third wild card spot in the National League. Reds did beat the Angels last night 4-1.
And Luck swings, and he sends a high, deep fly ball to right. It is way back, and it is gone on an 0-2 pitch. Gavin Lux hammers one out of here to straightaway right field. Two batters in, 2-0 Reds.
And that was all they would need as they wound up winning 4-1. That was Reds radio with the call. So you look at the standings, the Mets at 66-58, two less losses than Cincinnati as they've got two games in hand.
Yeah, also, the Padres have fallen off here a little bit. They got swept by the Dodgers, and then they lost last night too, didn't they?
They did, and along the way in this game, you had an oddity, if you will. They were already down 4-0, so I don't know if this would have made a difference. They wound up losing by a run, but you never know how things go after this. But down 4-0 early, and this happened with Xander Bogaerts.
Bogaerts hits one high and deep. Ramos back, and I think a fan took that one away.
And so after review, they did deem that it was interfered with.
It was? We just looked at that replay. Yeah. Did you think that that was fan interference?
That's what they ruled.
99.
To me, it looked like the ball hit his glove first and then slipped out.
So Mike Schilt is the Padres' manager.
I mean, that guy.
Unless that guy touched the ball first.
On the way down, perhaps.
Yes.
I don't know.
I don't know.
It's a weird one. Here was Mike Schilt. He did get ejected for arguing with the umpire after the call was made, the reversal was made. How'd they make the determination?
The definition that we got from a replay was it was clear that there was some impediment that took place. Clearly, he didn't touch the baseball. With the angle of the ball coming and where it went and where it landed, there was not anybody who was impeding with him. And if it's so clear, how come it takes 2 minutes and 40 seconds to figure it out?
Yeah, so he was
holy
not happy.
Schilt.
I mean,
that's what I say. Right.
What's hilarious about this is that guy had a giant handlebar mustache and an Abbott t-shirt. That's the guy who they said interfered with the ball.
He had an Abbott t-shirt.
Yeah, he was wearing an Abbott t-shirt and he had a big handlebar mustache. And by the way, he wasn't even close to the ball. Like, look at how.
Wow, I could see how.
In the slow motion one where they zoom in, he's like.
there it is, the Abbott t-shirt and the handlebar mustache. Yeah.
It doesn't look like he's interfering at all with the ball coming down, and it looks like the outfielder. Who's the outfielder?
I don't know.
All right.
Guy in the Giants.
The guy in the Giants. I know who it was.
I have no idea.
Willie McCovey.
I'm not sure. So anyway, the Giants wound up winning the game 4-3.
Did Buster Posey play in the outfield?
But did he ever? Catcher and a first baseman.
I was just saying that because you said Willie McCovey. Oh, yeah. By the way, isn't Buster Posey like running the team or something now?
Yeah. He's the GM.
Yeah.
Matter of fact. The Yankees visit the Rays tonight at Steinbrenner Field. Carlos Rodon, the start. Yankees, Red Sox, Mariners all tied for the three wild card spots, rather, in the American League. The Red Sox lost to the Orioles 6-3. Mariners fell to the Phillies 12-7. We also got word that Zach Wheeler had surgery to remove the blood clot in his upper right arm. No timeline given.
Yeah, but, I watched an interview with his manager, Rob Thompson, and, Rob Thompson, we're thinking of Zach and his family. You don't want anybody getting injured like this. I mean, this is thrombosis. I mean, this is a major surgery.
Yeah, deep vein thrombosis, which is
this is not a hamstring, as Rob Thompson said. It's not a hamstring or an ankle or something like Aaron Nola was dealing with an ankle.
Right. I mean, if not handled properly, it's a life-threatening situation for some people. Now, obviously, he's getting the best care in the world. So he will be okay. But as far as pitching wise, the rest of this year, it seems like it's going to be.
Can't imagine that, especially at the level at which he has pitched over the last couple of years. Their starters have pitched more innings than any other team in the league.
Hmm. Very Met-like.
What?
Very Met-like.
Sarcasm.
I'm kidding.
Going there.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, but the point being is that this is why they protect these players. It's obviously from Tommy John surgery as well, but this is. This is something that's pretty common in pitchers, blood clots in their shoulders and elbows. So everybody out there is like, why can't pitchers go 9 innings anymore? Well, this is one of the reasons.
Preseason football, the Bengals.
What does that mean?
If
you don't agree with me, then just say you don't agree with me.
I don't agree with you.
Okay.
I mean, how many pitchers have surgery to have blood clots removed from their shoulder?
We've heard it many times before.
When?
You've never heard of blood clots in the shoulder?
Well, no, you kind of made it seem like it was common.
It's not as common as Tommy John.
Right.
All right, so you do your little football thing over there. I'll come up with an answer for you.
I'm not being a jerk. It's not common.
I'm not saying you're a jerk.
No, I don't mean to be argumentative, but I don't really think it's very common at all. You big blonde boob.
Yeah, that's not what you said to me yesterday. Oh, thanks for coming.
I didn't say thank you. Yes, we needed you. I'll just give you this. So the Browns named Joe Flacco their week one starter, which is just amazing.
I mean,
it's cleanse week. You've kind of become a cranky, instigative, pain in the ass jerkwad.
Guys.
All right.
You're right.
The Giants play the Patriots Thursday. The Jets face the Eagles Friday.
I haven't had my super porridge yet.
And yes, you did have the Bengals beat the Commanders 31-17 last night. Joe Burrow played into the second quarter, 9 of 14, 62 yards, and a 4-yard touchdown pass.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. We'll see you next hour.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan and
You're
CBS
amazing.
Sports Network.
You're amazing.
Why is that?
Because I just asked you a question, a random question off the air, and you got it right before we came on the air. And the question that I asked you was, who's the quarterback coach for the Miami Dolphins? And you're like, I know this. And he was a former offensive coordinator. I know he was with the Vikings. It's not Scott Linehan. I'm like, you're getting warm. You go, Darryl Bevell. And I'm like, yeah, where the hell did that come from?
I think from the Hard Knocks that I watched a couple years ago with the Dolphins in season under Mike McDaniel. That's where I remember that.
The only reason I say that is because talking to Zach Wilson's father-in-law yesterday at Jerry's golf tournament, it was just like interesting perspective from a family member who's around the guy and loves the guy and wants the best for his son-in-law. You know what I mean?
Of course, yeah.
So the good thing about Zach is that he had a year in that room with Sean Payton and, of course, Bo Nix last year.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's with Mike McDaniel. He's with Darryl Bevell. He's with a group of people that have had huge success in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, you could...
Offensive success.
This is another one of those things where I'm going to make a comparison that I don't agree is actually going to play out the same way. But what do we say about Sam Darnold when he went to Minnesota? He spent a year under Kyle Shanahan. He was able to watch that. You know, now he goes to a team that's got an offensive head coach. And, you know, maybe this situation is right for him. So, I mean, you could make that comparison. I never believed that Zach could play. Maybe in this situation we see something. I don't think anybody expected Sam to be as good as he was last year. I thought he would have a decent season under Kevin O'Connell. Did not expect him to be a 14-win quarterback and be in the MVP discussion. But
well, Kevin's a terrific coach.
Yeah, he better do the same thing with J.J. McCarthy.
And that's you hated J.J. McCarthy, too, when they drafted him.
Yeah, but I did. I mean, I thought...
And that's your team.
Right. Yep. I still don't like it. I mean, I mean, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and great. I mean, that would be awesome if he is the savior and the guy that they draft that ends up bringing them to the promised land. I just don't necessarily believe that he is. But I did believe that Kevin O'Connell would be successful with Sam Darnold last year. To that extent, no, but successful.
You definitely said that.
Tua's, you
said it was going to be right.
Right. So, but Tua's got to get hurt, and then Zach's got to be in there. And then, I mean, I don't know. I feel now that I've met his father-in-law, I've done enough Zach Wilson. I mean, there's nothing else I want to say negative about the guy.
We're going somewhere with his father-in-law?
I don't know. See, this is where this gets the blurred lines, everything.
Do you mean? Like, what happened?
I mean, we got invited. He's a great guy. It was awesome meeting him. And he's friends with Keith. And they invited us to a Mets game where he's got these incredible seats. And I'm like, he's like, oh, would you go on a weekday? I'm like, yeah. I mean, to hang out with you, Keith, these great seats. And, you know, Mr. Delano was like, sure.
I mean, these guys do know that we have to get up early in the morning, right?
Well, yeah, but that's why he was asking, like, even on a weekday, I'm like, yeah. I mean,
getaway game, sure.
I was like, I'd make it work to, you know, it's just one time
getaway
a year, whatever.
Getaway game.
It was something like that, you know, and he goes, oh, you don't think Boomer would go? I said, in the right situation, you know, yeah. I was like, sure. So, I thought, you know, the four of us might go, but then I'm like, then you feel bad. But it's not our fault that Zach Wilson didn't work out here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to tell his dad, the father-in-law, like, the best thing that happened to Zach Wilson is your daughter. That was the best thing that happened to him when he came here.
Huh.
That's the way you got to look at it. And now he's off into the quarterback meat grinder,
mm-hmm.
trying to find his way. And there are many other players that have come through here that have come out the other side so much better because of, you know, the lizard skin that they grew here.
Yeah.
That's part of it. So you never know. You just never know. And he's been around good, solid, quality coaching over the last 2 years.
So you would go to a game? We should go to this game, you think? One of these games?
I mean,
apparently it's like the best seats in the house. And I saw a picture from the seats. They're pretty good.
Okay. Well, listen. Yeah, but let me get through this cleanse.
Well, I mean, yeah.
I mean, I can't go to a game when I'm on this cleanse.
And then Zach Wilson's father-in-law, like a crazed Mets fan, like absolutely.
And Giant fan. This is where, that's how the whole Giant fan thing started. He got a little bit defensive when I was just saying, like, you know, has it been all that great for the last 10 years? And he goes, you know, it's more like 15. I'm like, oh, you know, you should maybe host a talk show.
Do you think that he would allow his daughter to date Zach Wilson if he had done what he did with the Giants instead of the Jets?
That's a good question. I think there's similarities between Sydney and her, and I'm like, you know, just figure it out, girl.
Yeah,
go figure it out, and you know, I'll be still. Like, you know, my daughter married an Islander. What can
I
tell you?
I know, but I'm saying like it, but married an Islander who is like goes into franchise lore as you know one of the great players of you know with not from a goal scoring standpoint, but from you know just toughness, pure toughness. Islander toughness, respect, all of those things.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, Zach Wilson is the exact opposite of that. If Zach Wilson had crashed out in the way that he did for the Giants and not the Jets, would he have, as a big Giant fan, when he came over to the house to date his daughter, would he have been like, hey, this is okay? Would have been like, no, I don't think so. That's how much I think he cares about the Giants.
Yeah, I do. I think he does care about the Giants.
Like if Sydney brought home Zverev.
Oh, God. See? There's no way.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, God.
Like, I'd rather you date someone on the other team that I don't like as opposed to the guy who stinks on the team that I like.
Right.
That would be the worst-case scenario.
That would have been the worst-case scenario.
Yeah.
I mean, I basically left Gunnar at MSG because of Zverev. God, Jesus.
One of the all-time Esiason family stories, for sure.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.